Ladies and gentlemen, we are live!
Welcome, everyone, to the BX Sports Jedi MMA Weekly with Austin and Chef Dan. I am Austin, and it's my co-host, Chef Dan. How are you doing tonight, Chef Dan?
I am doing very, very well, coming off of a very surprising, to say the least, MMA event that happened over the weekend, UFC. It has a lot to talk about. We got a lot to talk about, Austin, so we got to get right into it. We definitely got to get right into it.
Yes, you're right. We do got to get right into it. And this past, before we do, just want to mention, you have audio podcast platforms. We're on them, where we do Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Vision FM, etc. So definitely, if you want to listen to us on audio on podcast platforms, check out us there. And you see the links in the description. And thank you guys for tuning and watching. And like Dan said, let's get started. Let's start the main event of UFC 273. Which was the featherweight title fight between Korean Zombie and Alexander Volkanovski, the champion. And Alexander Volkanovski wins this fight via fourth round stoppage, TKO in the fourth round. And this fight was not competitive, to say the least.
It wasn't. It really wasn't. Coming off of the predictions I had, I was completely wrong. I can say that, and me being completely wrong, it's not to say that it led to it being a uncompetitive fight, but just what I thought I would have saw, it wasn't at all that. And that being, I thought I would have seen Alexander Volkanovski try and really, you know, initiate more grappling, try and mix in the martial arts, but that wasn't it. He decided to stand up with the Korean Zombie, and what many thought wouldn't have been the wisest choice for Volkanovski, but he chose to do so. In a very impressive fashion, in a way that it was just a completely dominating performance of the Korean Zombie. He was too quick. The punches were too sharp. They were too clean. He left the first two rounds virtually untouched by the Korean Zombie, not really breaking much of a sweat. It got into the third round where Volkanovski did more of that work. He started to mix in it and mix in the clinch and the grappling there, where Korean Zombie had some good defense, but that was the only defense he was able to provide as far as the grappling, because when it came to the striking, like, he tried, but it just wasn't gonna happen. It just wasn't gonna happen for him. I was thinking if there was possibly a way for him to, you know, maybe there was a possible other game plan for Korean Zombie, but with the skill set that he's shown us over, you know, his career, there was nothing he could have done against Volkanovski.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it. I didn't expect to Volkanovski just beat him up like that, standing in the early round. I thought maybe initiate some grappling just so it can tire Zombie or get Zombie to think about, but it just wasn't the case. He just was faster, quicker, you know, than Zombie. He's able to throw more shots and just beat up Zombie for all the fight, basically. I mean, Zombie may land a couple times, but that's about it. Other than that, it was Volkanovski hurting Zombie, rocking him, dropping him a couple of times, but Zombie kept getting up. Hence why he's known as the Korean Zombie. But you just knew it was just a bad night. It was gonna be a bad night for Zombie, and that Volkanovski could just do whatever he wanted to him in that fight, because Korean Zombie had no answer, and to the point where it looked like the fight maybe couldn't stop after the third round, but really continue. But her team was also keeping an eye out for Zombie, and once Volkanovski rocked him, like committed to the fourth round, and Zombie, you know, was wobbled, went backwards. Her team saw enough and stopped the fight. And this was just a great performance by Volkanovski. This is probably his best performance of his career, if you really think about it.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, the Ortega fight, that was a different type of performance, but this one was like, when you say best performance, you mean it, like flawless victory. This was truly a flawless victory. There's nothing I could add to it. It was a masterpiece.
Yeah, it was definitely a masterpiece for Volkanovski. And as he's talking about either doing a Choju Max, or if not, going up to lightweight, because he feels like, you know, because it seems like there's not many contenders at featherweight for him to fight at the moment, besides Holloway.
That's another discussion we could have, but it is an option for him to move up into weight. That is definitely an option, while the rest of these guys have to figure themselves out. I mean, Holloway is the next fight. I don't think Holloway has to fight anyone else in order to fight Volkanovski. He's got that next fight sealed against Volkanovski, so we know that's going to be the next fight to be made. Volkanovski's probably, you know, he's probably going to want to go later on this year, because he didn't take much damage, and so that would have to be the fight coming up later on this year, him versus Holloway. But then after that, if he happens to, you know, get by Holloway, what's his next course of action? There's nothing stopping him from moving up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's talked about, I mean, he was on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani today, talking about he's paying attention to the Oliveira and Gaethje fight that happens next month, in terms of what happens in that fight. But, if the Holloway fight isn't getting made, obviously, you know, I know it was supposed to be Holloway and Volkanovski this pay-per-view, but Holloway got injured, if I'm mistaken, so Zombie replaced him. But I think Volkanovski's gonna want to fight again this year, because he took no damage, and plus he's only been able to fight like once these last couple of years, from like a lot of it due to the pandemic and also restrictions from Australia, etc. So pretty sure he wants to be more active, and a lot of people want to see that Choju Holloway, because these are two best featherweights, and he definitely wants to settle the score once and for all, because second fight especially is very controversial in terms of the decision. So I think it's good to get that out of the way and sell that once and for all, and see who is the best featherweight in the world, and put that title online. And hopefully that fight gets made soon. I mean, hopefully, like, all, you know, somewhere around summertime, like maybe not July probably, but maybe August, you see, or September even, Holloway Volkanovski 3. I mean, hopefully we see it then.
That could be a possibility, but there's nothing else for me to add about this fight. It was a, like we said, it was a masterpiece of Volkanovski. Salute to him. And in regards to Korean Zombie, he did hint that this may be his last fight. We don't know, but if it is, want to say thank you to Korean Zombie for everything he's given us inside of that octagon. He's bled and shed his heart, soul, and tears like a warrior has inside that octagon, giving us nothing but classics, and we love him for it. So thank you. If that is his last fight, thank you so much to Korean Zombie.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you. This is his last fight, considering, you know, he's had a great career. I mean, he's had some of the most exciting fights, you know, great knockouts in MMA history, like his fight with Poirier in 2012, which is a fight of the year, to some of his knockouts over Dennis Bermudez and Hernando Moicano and Leonard Garcia in the UFC. I mean, those are some great performance knockouts as well. And yeah, he's a Korean Zombie for a reason, because this guy has one of the best chins in MMA history. He's only been knocked out twice, legitimately. That was that crazy elbow from Yair, you know, then the fifth round, then of course this fight. Even this fight, I mean, there are times where he got rocked. It looked like he, for most fighters, they'd be done, but yeah, he just kept going because of that chin of his. And yeah, great career for Korean Zombie, a guy who was always a contender in the featherweight division for 10 years. He's been a contender, so it shows how good he is. He's definitely helped Korean MMA along the way, so pioneering that aspect as well.
Yeah, most definitely. But with that being said, we can move on to the next fight on the card. This was in the bantamweight division for the bantamweight championship. Aljamain Sterling versus Peter No Mercy Yan. And Aljamain Sterling wins this fight via split decision. He goes on to retain the bantamweight championship. And this was a very controversial fight. We even hear that Dana White felt that he thought that Peter Yan was robbed and that Peter Yan had won the fight. I'm of differing opinion, though. Austin, what do you say?
I went back and watched today, like, especially the first round, most importantly, because I think rounds 2 to 5 are easy to judge. 2-3, Aljamain, excuse me. 4-5, Peter Yan. I think we both can agree with that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people agree. The first round, I can see why people think Yan won, because some of the shots he landed that had were more damaging, and yeah, I felt in control. But Aljamain did land more shots in that fight. I mean, the round, especially the leg kicks, even a couple body kicks, even. And I mean, it's weird because Dana White thought Yan won the first round. Big John thought the first round should have gone to Yan. He mentioned how the shots Yan threw were more damaging, especially toward the end of that round where he threw some of the flurry at Aljamain and then got some control. I kind of think Yan did win that first round and should have been awarded the fight because of that. I see where some people think, well, Aljamain won because he landed more shots, he's more active than Yan. It's a very close fight. It's a very competitive fight, definitely. A lot there from the first fight.
I don't think the controversy should lay in the first round. I think the controversy should lay in the fourth round. Because I, you know, distinctively rewatching that fight, I want to ask the people that watched that fight, if you remember that fourth round, that was the round that Peter Yan was able to gain control off on Aljamain in mostly grappling, right?
Yep.
And so they said, I remember even the commentators stating, well, he controlled the grappling for most of that round, so we have to give him the round, right? And that's what everyone said, and that's what everyone agreed with. But I think the controversy really should be in that fourth round, because remembering that fourth round, how much work did Peter Yan do in the grappling versus resting?
Did decent on resting. It's somewhere, but not like a lot in the fourth round.
I mean, so now here's the thing. I'm not comparing it to any other fight. I have to compare it to the rounds that preceded prior. Why do I give Aljamain the second and the third round? It's not just because he got Yan's back and that was it. He was controlling Yan's back while landing strikes and continuously trying to get some chokes involved. Even the third round, which is a bit more debatable than that second round as far as in control, to me personally, in watching that, you see that Aljamain is still trying to get submissions all throughout that grappling exchange in the third round. So that's why we give Aljamain that third round. Versus in the fourth round, to me, how much credence am I going to give Peter Yan for resting in that fourth round? He has control. Yes, I'm going to give him points for that, but how much am I going to give it to him when he's resting a lot of that round? And his most of his work was done in the stand-up. Versus if you look in that second round, I would give Aljamain is close to getting a 10-8 in that second round because of how much domination he provides in that second round. It is a clear control of Peter Yan's back, and he's striking. He has Peter Yan in full control, and Peter Yan's body language, even after the second round, looks defeated. I don't think Peter Yan readjusted up until the fourth round. So for me, when watching the round, I think the controversy for me lies in the fourth round. I think Peter Yan doesn't gain as much control as we would like to think. And I think he has control there, but is it as much control as Aljamain provides in that second and third round? I don't think so.
Yeah, but I think I think some of the third round, I don't think he's necessarily was going for a loss. I mean, he tried some submissions, but I don't think he ever was close to putting him on, because Yan, you gotta give Yan credit, his defense off his back, what prevented Aljamain from doing any submission attempts. So, I grant, maybe it's different because he's trying, but Yan's just doing a better job of defending it. Versus what you mentioned, the fourth round with Yan, in terms of what he did when he got control. Because some people say that Sterling just took his back in control and didn't really do too much.
But then even in the third round, if you want to debate that, I remember there was a sequence there where Yan is almost getting up. I commend him for the defense, right? But then we also had to commend Aljamain because he's still able to get himself back into positions to control the round. Yan is getting up, so now he goes for some type of a leg lock, right? Where he has to crank Yan back in order to complete it. Yan is fighting for the leg control. After he gets the legs free, Aljamain is able to rock him right back into back control, where he's still striking and still trying to get the chokes, trying to get the submissions. Yan, I commend him for the defense, but he's still getting outstricken on the ground in that time in the third round. Whether you debate it or not, that's up to you. But for me personally, I think the true controversy should lie in that fourth round and how you judge Peter Yan's fourth round versus Aljamain's second round.
I still think the second round Aljamain's 10-9, just me personally, because he never. The element is, there was never a point where it was like Yan was close to getting like finished. I mean, yeah, he got control, and Sterling was just going for submission attempts and did do strikes on the ground, but I don't think it was like enough to where Yan was getting his butt whipped or anything. That's just me. I mean, you maybe disagree with that, but I still think 10-9 Aljamain. Either way, clearly Aljamain won that second round. Like I said, rounds 2-5 would be pretty easy to judge, in my opinion.
But at the end of the day, Aljamain does retain the title. And so with that, he definitely let it be known what his next fight is going to be. He wants TJ Dillashaw. That might happen at the end of this year. That might happen, at the start of next year. Who knows? We'll find out. But for right now, Aljamain, when he spoke, as far as in regards to what he thought, what he was going to show to the world, he kind of, he didn't lie to us. When he said that he wasn't in his best condition for that fight, we saw it physically from the day of the weigh-in, how he looked a bit bigger, stronger than when he showed up the first fight. When he said that the game plan wasn't smart and that he came in a bit hurt, I don't know if we could take that for granted, but we can say that the game plan this time was different and that he knew that he was out of character and he was able to control large parts of the fight that people thought he wasn't able to. And so he comes away out of this fight with a lot more clout than he did walking in. And so we do have a bantamweight champion.
We do. And you mentioned that's what Dillashaw, that's what Aljamain wants next. I think Dillashaw's in the crowd and Dillashaw wants that fight. Obviously, because considering Dillashaw never lost the belt and he's come off a victory, although a controversial victory against Corey Sandhagen. And that's why I do wonder what's next, because you could do the Dillashaw fight, but how long till Dillashaw is back? Because Dillashaw got surgery after that Sandhagen fight in July, and I know he was helping train Juan Archuleta for his fight in Bellator, but then he had to go get his knee scoped out or cleaned out because his knee was bothering him. But I mean, I believe he should be better now based on what Dillashaw said. I do wonder, did he do the Dillashaw fight next, or maybe not, because how close that fight was Sandhagen? Do you probably do a third fight with Jan Sterling, or possibly Henry Cejudo? Because Henry Cejudo did announce that he said he's back in the USADA test pool. That's his claim, and Cejudo was the champ when he left. It's possible maybe Cejudo comes back, maybe fights Aljamain or Volkanovski, since he's been trying to call him Volkanovski for a while. I mean, what are your thoughts on possibly a Cejudo Aljamain matchup, or maybe it's possible to do Jon Sterling 3?
I think you're getting ahead of yourself right now. There is a guy who's ranked number 3 in this division that has been putting in a whole lot of work in Jose Aldo. I think Aldo is, you know, if TJ Dillashaw isn't the fight to happen, I think Aldo is next up, and he has that claim because he has been putting on great fights so far. And the way we were calling it was kind of that if Dillashaw was healthy enough and Aljamain and Jan were didn't happen at the time that we thought it was, and Dillashaw and Aldo could get together, then that would have been the number one contendership right there. So I think we're kind of skipping ahead of you know, Jose Aldo and the work that he's put in. I think Aldo deserves that next shot.
Yeah, but I think Dillashaw has a claim. Recently, he's come up victory. Although it said close, I thought Dillashaw did enough to win against Sandhagen. And he was never, and plus he was a champ when he never lost the belt. He got stripped, although it was for USADA reasons. But
what I'm referencing is your question in asking about Henry Cejudo. And yeah, my whole thing is with Cejudo, I know he's coming back, but he's not been recently putting in the work that Jose Aldo has in the division. I know he left when he left. He left when he was the champion. That's cool and all, but I think if anything, if TJ Dillashaw isn't ready yet, and Aldo is ready, and Aljamain is ready to get back into the ring, then I think Aldo versus Sterling makes sense for the championship. And TJ Dillashaw, if he wants to fight for the belt, who's better to come back to fight than Henry Cejudo? And maybe you could make that fight. But if we're waiting for Dillashaw to come back from, you know, being healthy, and Aldo is ready, and we still have to wait for Cejudo to clear USADA pool, Aldo is right there. He's the guy.
Yeah, that's true. I think Dillashaw is ready. I think maybe if I remember, I'm trying, because I know he did a press conference like that. He had some questions like the day of the pay-per-view. I know you mentioned that, but I think maybe he should be better. Like, he shouldn't be too bad. So I think if it's not too serious, the little thing, which is like a little minor thing, then possibly he's ready to fight soon, which I think he is. And I know Aljamain will fight again this year, considering Aljamain the last couple of years, he's only fought once in 2019, once in 2020, and then once last year, although the next surgery had a lot to do with that. He was supposed to fight Jan, 2020, I remember before the first fight, they were supposed to fight December 2020, but then something happened, they got pushed to March, and then we know what happened, the first fight. So, I mean, Sterling, I'm pretty sure, likes to fight more often instead of once a year. And so I think, Sterling will fight again this year. I do think probably Dillashaw, probably like late summer or fall, around that time period. And I think, and if they do fight, I think I think personally, style-wise, it might be a tougher matchup for Sterling. Well, just as tough as Giannis, but a different style in terms of kicking game with those sharp rings. Not that Sterling can't win, but I think it'll be tough, a very tough fight for Sterling.
Yeah, but we'll see. And also in regards to Cejudo coming back, if he is coming back to the division, I see he has two fights tailor-made for him right now if he wants to jump right back into contention. And that's either Aldo or Jan, preferably Jan. I think if Jan also wants to come back into contention and let everyone know that he's still that guy, why not beat the guy that left holding the title?
Yes, I was actually going to bring up Jan. I think, because my thing with Sterling, if Cejudo is that he might possibly want to go after 145 title instead of 135 title, because he's talked about going after Volkanovski, wanting to fight him and make history. So it is possible he tries. Not that it will happen, because it seems like the UFC and Cejudo have been clashing ever since the retirement thing. So it's possible that we might get, so Cejudo might go up to 145 division. I think if you're Jan, I was going to say, he should probably fight the winner of the Chito Vera and Rob Font main event that's happening 3 weeks from now. No, less than 3 weeks from Saturday. Or 3 weeks from Saturday, excuse me.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. But all in all, the bantamweight division with this news of Henry Cejudo coming back, it's definitely getting interesting.
Definitely. And like I said, all Jan has to do is win one fight. If Sterling's still the champion, you can easily do the third fight.
Yeah. So with that being said, we can move on to the next fight on the main card. This was in the welterweight division. This was my main event. Khamzat Chimaev versus Gilbert Burns. Khamzat Chimaev and Gilbert Burns go the distance. This is the first time in Khamzat Chimaev's career that a fight is going the distance. And he wins the fight via unanimous decision. I didn't have any disagreements with the decision at all. Neither. I thought that Khamzat, a lot of people were trying to disagree with the third round. We know that Khamzat definitely won the first round. Gilbert Burns won the second round. And it comes up to the third round where some people may find it debatable. I don't find it debatable at all, because Khamzat clearly outstruck Gilbert Burns. And there wasn't just point punching too, because as much as he had moments of wobbling Gilbert Burns, Khamzat also had his moments of making Gilbert Burns back down all the way to the cage, wobbling. He shelled up and was able to land a couple of good shots through the defense of Gilbert Burns. It was a war like Khamzat Chimaev said he wanted. This was definitely a fight of the night. I was definitely entertained and amused by this. This was all in all a fun fight. Where this put Khamzat Chimaev, I don't know in the rankings, but we do know what his next fight is, because Dana White definitely announced it that if he could win this fight, he goes up against Colby Covington next. And that now is going to be a very interesting fight to me. But what did you see from the fight with Gilbert Burns?
Incredible fight. Early, a possible fight in your contender, when you think about it, considering how back and forth it was. And they both got dropped several times. I mean, I agree with you. It was Khamzat won the fight. I don't agree with people who thought Gilbert won. I thought this was clearly Khamzat's fight. I thought he won rounds 1 and 3 for the same reasons you mentioned about round 3. In terms of the punches he landed, it wasn't just point punches, it was also punches that were hurting Gilbert and stumbling, wobbling him. But this fight, man, wow, back and forth. Man, Khamzat dropping Gilbert in that first round and going for a takedown early on. And, he somewhat got it, not really. Still, Khamzat was doing a lot of different things in that second round. I mean, Gilbert dropping him, I think it was twice he dropped Khamzat, if I'm not mistaken. Khamzat getting up both times, and then even after the second one, for a brief second, it looked like Khamzat was done. Well, he gets up and gets a takedown, less than 10 seconds after getting dropped the second time, then the round, and then, crazy stuff. I mean, man, that was just incredible. And the third, they're apparently going back and forth. I mean, both guys, I mean, Gilbert looked a little tired. I mean, but a lot of this dude, like the war he's in, Hamzat's a little exhausted. But still, Hamzat, and we saw Hamzat face adversity, and Gilbert, both of them faced adversity. Both of them survived, kept fighting, and were savages, and just showed how good they show how tough they are, and also skills wise. And man, what a performance! What a fight! Incredible fight by Hamzat Chimaev. What a and Gilbert Burns. Shout out to him because both guys fought great tonight. I mean, well, not tonight, but Saturday night. Excuse me. It was just wow. What a shout out to both of them. Fight tonight, possible fight of your contender, possibly.
Yeah, and man, with that being said, we know Hamzat's next fight. We don't know what's next for Gilbert Burns. We know that he is gonna fall in the ranking, but there is a possibility with Luque and Muhammad coming up this weekend. Maybe he fights the winner or the loser of that, or maybe there is a slew of names in the welterweight division that Gilbert can always fight someone and get right back up into the mix. He can even fight Neil Magny, who just came off of an impressive victory. So there's always a chance for Gilbert. But in regards to Hamzat versus Colby Covington, what I wanted to see with that fight, the reason why that fight was so interesting to me was in regards to this Gilbert Burns fight, I wanted to see if Hamzat through three rounds was going to continue marching forward to his opponent. We see that these Dagestani fighters, when they come in, they have this pressure about themselves that they can provide, where they can just move forward relentlessly no matter what's going to happen. And it may not even be for grappling, it could be for striking, whatever. They just move forward. Not a lot of head movement, but the pressure alone enough. It's terrifying. And now we're going to see it between a guy in Colby Covington who also likes to provide that pressure. So what are you looking forward in that fight right there?
Here's the thing. Is that the next fight, though? Because Dana White says it, but doesn't you? Sometimes Dana White will say something doesn't mean it's official. That's happened before, Dana White. You know, I do think it's likely this is the next fight, but if they do fight, I think this fight, if you're Colby or Usman even, your confidence might be a little bit higher in your chances against Hamzat, because he looks human Saturday night against Gilbert. And though Colby, yes, doesn't have the power in his hands that Kamaru or even Gilbert has, still, I think you know that he is human, and that instead, I think it gives you more confidence. Because if Hamzat was gone out there and just destroyed Gilbert in a round, then it would be like, then let's be honest, not like many people would give Kobe a shot, and even Kobe would have to wonder, dang, can I really beat this guy? But after seeing that, I think your confidence is a little bit higher for, you know, for Kobe or even Usman that you can beat this guy. And I do think, and especially considering like Kobe likes to put pressure just like Hamzat does, like these, you know, Dagestanis and Chechen fighters, like if you're for Hamza's case, they like to put a lot of pressure on their opponents. I do want to see how that works, because especially if it's a 5-round fight, because Hamza hasn't had one, and we know Kobe's cardio conditioning is like some of the best in all of MMA currently. I do wonder what happens if this fight does go in the third, fourth, fifth round, excuse me. How would that play for Hamza if it does make it there? And one thing I think for Kobe Covington, I think we have to throw a lot of kicks in that fight against Hamzat. But even if you don't land too much, make it somewhere it gives Hamzat something else to think about. Because Kobe Covington, I've noticed, when he does have success standing-wise, whether it be some of the Usman fights or even the Masvidal fight, he does throw some kicks, whether it be like body kicks and stuff like that. Usually sometimes he lands and then he doesn't, but it gives his opponent something to think about. Let's not forget, it hurt Usman with a head kick in the fourth round after what happened in the second round with him and Usman in the second fight where Kobe got dropped. So there's a chance Kobe can win this fight, but it's gonna be a competitive fight. It's not gonna be an easy fight for both guys. I'll say that. I think for both guys, they're both gonna be challenged, and both gonna make adjustments in this fight, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's gonna definitely be an interesting fight. in regards to if it's whether it's official or not yet, if we look at the rankings on Tuesday and we see that Khamzat ends up in number two, Kobe's already number one. I see nowhere else for Khamzat to go.
Right. And I think also you mentioned that's a good point, but you mentioned Gilbert Burns. Well, now I was gonna say it depends what happens this weekend, and we'll talk about this weekend's main events in terms of Luke and Bilal Muhammad, because I think whatever happens in that fight can determine who Gilbert fights next, personally. And but yeah, I think if Hamza is ranked number two, I mean Kobe might. Those two would be maybe the next matchup, logical matchup for the two of them to fight. Or, especially considering we don't know when Usman's going to fight Leon Edwards, because that's still the question, when they're going to fight the title.
Yeah, so with that being said, though, we're finished with that fight. We can move on to this next fight. This fight happened in You said what?
Strawweight division.
The women's strawweight division between Mackenzie Dern and Tisha Torres. Mackenzie Dern wins this fight via split decision. I didn't disagree with this one either. I didn't disagree with this one. What about you?
I thought it was the right call. I mean, it was close. It was competitive. It was a very close fight between Mackenzie and Tisha. The first round was Tisha Torres for sure. The second round was clearly Mackenzie Dern. And then the third round is really the competitive round. It's the round it's debatable which one he gave it to. But I agree. When I saw it, I thought, you know what, Mackenzie did deserve to win. But I also would have been mad if Tisha won either.
Wouldn't have been mad. But what was really surprising to me also was what was it? It's early in the first round, the way Mackenzie Dern's striking was, it was like it as much as she's cleaned it up so far in her fighting career, this was I don't know why. Did you notice it with like be it far from me to judge it, but it felt like she was throwing that right hand a little, like it was a little too telegraphed for that fight.
I can see that. I think early on, her striking was kind of like trouble. Like it wasn't helping her early on. I think as the fight progressed, it got better and she was landing more to the point where every time she landed, it really affected Tisha, and that's what, and Tisha kept throwing that karate sidekick. That's kind of like was used like a jab, basically.
Yeah, and I think what really also helped. What really helped Mackenzie Dern, I'm sorry, because I'm just remembering the image in my head, is when she has and this is funny too, I love this stuff because she even mentions it in the post-fight conference, but when she has Tisha Torres up against the cage and then she just jumps guard and then kicks off the cage in order to complete the guard, right, to try and get try and get it cinched in. And then she's even going for the Kimura. And then when she acknowledges that Joe Rogan says on the commentary while they're watching him, he's like, she might as well jump guard right here. And that's what she decides to do. I love when you hear stuff like that. That's something that I was talking to myself. I had to remember that because that's something you don't really get from any other sport.
You don't. That's a fair point. You really don't get that. Where someone hears a commentary and they does something, that is true. It's only MMA, maybe boxing you see it, maybe, but it's very like an MMA thing. I think you're right about that, Dan. I mean, it was when Kenzie Dern that stood in that second round, I was impressed because she had Tisha against the cage, jumped to their guard, uses the cage leverage to put on a Kimura, and shout out to Tisha for surviving some of the submission attempts, because there were some where like, oh, Tisha, Rogan and was like, ooh, Tisha, bad position. I thought, ooh, Tisha in bad position. And then went to the ground and she knew she couldn't get the Kimura. She went for like a triangle. Then she went for like a leg lock, like an ankle lock. Like, I can't, Can't describe it.
It went from an ankle lock to a heel hook, right back to an ankle lock to a knee bar.
Yep.
Right to a to when they were scrambling around, triangle attempt doesn't happen because Tisha's just game to it all. But what it sucked for Tisha Torres, but you knew that she was in a bad position, and she chose in a plethora of crappy options, she chose the least crappiest of options. And that was while that Mackenzie Dern jumped guard and she's holding on to Mackenzie Dern's entire body weight, she doesn't decide at one point, you know what, let me just slam this girl down. Because if she did do that, that would have put her in a way worse position. That probably would have ended the fight even sooner. But she decided to carry all of that body weight and fight through the Kimura attempts and all of that stuff. And so it was just, you know, like I said, in a plethora of crappy options, she chose the least crappiest. And that's what it ended up happening. It got her a debatable fight.
I agree, yeah. I mean, just she created her surviving on submission 10, especially the leg lock, like the ankle lock and like the knee bar. I mean, one, I thought for sure, because I think it was the way her foot was turning, I was like, ooh, she didn't show me, ooh, Tisha, oh no. That's what I was thinking, but she survived. Now, part of me does think, because, you know, females tend to be more flexible with guys, that she, it helped her out, because I think if there's two males doing this, I think the guy against Smith, put in that submission position, probably will tap. That's just me. That's just me personally, but either way, I mean, still impressive for Tisha to survive all those, because Mackenzie, we know how good she is in jiu-jitsu. She's the best jiu-jitsu girl in that division. And survival submission attempts, if you're Tisha Torres, it just shows how tough you are, shows how you've been putting the work and training, and it definitely shows that you're not easy to go put out. There's a reason why Tisha Torres has never been finished in any of her fights.
Absolutely agree with you. And who did Mackenzie Dern call out for after a fight?
She originally wanted Marina Rodriguez rematch, but she said Marina just fought Yan Xian recently. And then the problem, she said maybe Wei Li if she's available, but unfortunately, we just learned that Wei Li and Jacek are rematching in June. And she mentioned how basically the division's kind of logjam, because Carla and Roosevelt fight for the title next month. Then June is Wei Li and Joanna, and then Marina just fought Yan. I don't know if Marina wants to fight Mackenzie again, because she just beat her in October. She said maybe Yan Xian, possibly. Now, granted, that fight was controversial, that Xian and Marina fight. That happened, I think, like a month ago or 2 months ago.
That's a possibility, but she does have a plethora of options, even with the division being logjam. But, we can move on to the next fight. On the main card, this was... What happened?
No, I was going to say,
we can move on to the next fight on the main card. This was the first fight of the main card. Mark Madsen versus Vince Pichel. And Mark Madsen wins this fight. He keeps a perfect record of 12-0. And, I didn't call this fight correctly at all. I thought that Vince Pichel's stand-up game was going to be too much for Mark Madsen, because Mark Madsen, like you said, was going to take a heavy grappling approach. But what I didn't see coming was Mark Madsen's stand-up game being just as good, or if not better, than Vince Pichel. What were your thoughts on that fight?
Excuse me. Mark Madsen's stand-up game is a lot better than I expected. It really neutralized, you know, it worked against Pichel, because Rob thought Pichel was a better striker. And definitely shows that Madsen's involvement in the MMA game, which is good. You know, if he wants to, you know, continue to have success in this sport. And Mattson went through wrestling heavy offense and even got a little bit tired at one point, and he got taken down, which, I mean, shocking because Mattson is a three-time Olympic wrestling competitor, being in the Olympic Games three times at wrestling, and is still a medalist in the 2016 Olympics. So you know how good a wrestler Mark Mattson is. He's one of the best out there in it. Probably in all UFC when you think about it. But yeah, I mean, this was a good fight for Mark Mattson. Got a good victory and a good concise victory and a pay-per-view main card as he moves to 12-0. And I think it's time for him to fight a ranked guy. I think if someone he should probably fight next who's ranked is Carlos Diego Ferreira. I think it's a good match. I think it's a good matchup for him, possibly.
That'll be an interesting matchup.
He's ranked number 12, and Ferreira has only lost to, like, elite guys. Look at the guys he's lost to. He lost to Darius twice. I believe he lost to, I won't say Anthony Pettis, and maybe, I think he lost to, I forget. I know he lost to Darius twice, and I know everyone else he's lost to has been guys who are, like, elite lightweights and guys who are on win streaks. So, I think that's a good matchup for Mark Mattson next, considering he called out a ranked opponent. I think that's the perfect one, just me personally. For Mattson.
Yeah, most definitely. I agree with you. It sucks though that Vince Michel couldn't get this win because, like they said on the commentary, he's always been very, very close to, you know, getting his shot and moving up along the rankings. But so many injuries, and then you take into account the fact that he's getting older and older, and injuries that he's getting are outside of the octagon. It sucks, but it is what it is with that. And just want to ask you, is there anyone you want to shout out on the preliminaries that you felt had a standout performance?
Yes, I do. I want to shout out Alexei Golynyk. This guy wins via submission. First round, 3 minutes and 39 seconds. The reason why I want to shout this out is because this is his 60th MMA victory. Not many guys in the sport have 60 MMA victories, especially considering I mentioned this guy's been competing since the 90s, since 96, I mentioned. And the guy's got, and once again, by submission, that's his 47th submission victory. Crazy, this guy wins by submission. It's like you know how he wins. You know if he's fighting, if he wins, it's going to be submission. And it's just impressive to be 44, about to 45 in June. And this guy continues to win, still fighting at 44, winning fights in the UFC, and 60 victory and 47 submission. I mean, man, hard not to be impressed. Give tip of cap to him, one of the great submission practitioners in the history of the sport.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Not only that, but when you look at the way he got the submission, it was a neck crank to scarf hold, they say, and yes. Then the submission was so impressive. They have the clip floating around from the UFC. After the fight, his opponent locates him in the back of the arena. He's like, yo, man, teach me how you got me into that. Like, you got to teach me what you did. And he's teaching them and all that. Like, that's so impressive. So, that was an impressive submission there. A fighter that I want to salute on the preliminaries, Rocky Raquel Pennington. She won the fight against Aspen Ladd via unanimous decision. And this was Rocky's classic Raquel Pennington fight. Throwing leather like crazy, getting into the clinch. A dirty boxing as always. It's just a grimy fight. She was just kept throwing and throwing and throwing. And it was even to a point where she said, I think in a second or third round, she broke her fist. It was her left fist, and she still kept throwing that sucker. Just kept throwing and throwing. It's just, that's who Rocky Pennington is, and it was a great fight. It was a great fight. Salute to her.
Yeah, tremendous. Salute to her. She went 4 in a row, climbs up the women's bantamweight division. That's a division that can use someone that's on a winning streak, considering considering how the division's been recently. So shout out to Raquel Pennington for that victory, 4 in a row for her now.
It's funny that I thought this was being contested at featherweight, but
that's what I thought too. Yeah, I guess we were wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with that division. I don't know what they're going to do with that division.
It's not even a division. I mean, it's just
It's there's a champion for it.
But it's like, there's no ranked fighters, no ranked females, there's no... It's like, is it?
All right, let's move on into the next... let's move on into the next card coming up. We do have a Bellator card coming up this Friday.
Ooh, a nice one.
It is going to be a very nice one. It is going to be the rematch of AJ McKee versus Patricio Pitbull for the featherweight championship. Not only that, we have another championship being defended. It is the light heavyweight championship. Vadim Nemkov. Thank you for correcting me. Vadim Nemkov versus Corey Anderson for the light heavyweight championship. You got to tell me, Austin, because there's some good fights on this card, too. I see Aaron Pico on this card.
Woo, Pico. Let's go. I like that.
Pico. There's some good fighters on this card, but you tell me, let's start off, let's kick off with the AJ McKee versus Patricio Pitbull fight, because that one, the first fight ended surprisingly in the first round. Couple of strikes, then the guillotine.
Yep, and it was over.
And a lot of people thought that may have been a bit controversial. They thought maybe Patricio wasn't out, but he definitely was. And we'll see coming up in this second fight what's going to happen. Like, what do you think? How do you see this second fight going?
This is probably the most anticipated rematch in Bellator history, I think. How good both guys are, despite how quickly the first fight was. I think we all believe that we all know Pitbull's better than what he showed. And we think it's going to be a much different fight this fight around. And, man, I wonder, I'm excited to see how what does McKee do differently this time, considering he had as good a performance as you can have, minus a 5-second knockout like Mazzola against Askren. But other than that, Pitbull had a great performance. It's like, how does he top this off? And if you're McKee did, had a great performance. How you top it off, I meant to say, not Pitbull, if I did say it. And if you're Pitbull, Pitbull's, we know how good he is. He's got heavy hands, great overall fighter, great jiu-jitsu, good jiu-jitsu. He has a good, better cardio now. I think Pitbull, I wonder, does he try and initiate the action first? Try to, like, get close to McKee and try like, throw more shots to get McKee defensive to prevent what happened last time to happen this time? I can see that possibly. Maybe throw some leg kicks as well to mix it up with McKee. I think that's a possibility with Pitbull in terms of what he might do in this fight against McKee.
I agree with you 100%. There is a new game plan from Pitbull. I agree with that 100% because now he knows the power that AJ McKee has. He knows that, you know, that stunned him the first time, so he got him there, but now he, you know, he's prepared for that. My whole thing, though, is how comfortable are you if you're Pitbull? Because, you know, AJ McKee, when he got that victory, that wasn't plan A. Plan A was probably to go 5 rounds with Pitbull.
Yeah.
Plan A was be prepared for 5 rounds of Pitbull, be prepared of him doing this, that, whatever, him getting comfortable, him doing so forth and so on. How much are you prepared for him to go back to that original plan A, and are you nervous about that?
That's a good question. That's a very good point, Dan, that what you just said there. I do that. We shall see. And I know Pitbull in rematches tend to do very well. I know he had a rematch with Manuel Sanchez. Well, he won that fight. That first fight was very close. In the second fight, he just destroy Manuel Sanchez, not finish him the first round. And I'm trying to remember, I think it's another rematch he had. I want to say, I know he fought Benson Henderson, lost the first time. I think he avenged that loss. I believe so. I know Pitbull's had a couple of rematches, and he tends to win, like, most, I think all the rematches he's won. So he doesn't fit in rematches, so that's something to look out for. Can AJ McKee get that cycle, or is Pitbull continue to remain undefeated in rematches?
We definitely shall see. And like you said, is it a story of the old champion was caught off guard, but now he's coming back to retain his? Or is the new guard starting to widen the gap, or actually starting to develop a gap shown between him and the competitors? And with this victory, he possibly starts to establish that gap and maybe widen it between him and other competitors. We definitely shall see. But let's get right into this next fight on that card. Vadim Nemkov versus Corey Anderson. You got to tell me, man, what are you seeing here in this fight? What do you see? Break it down for me. What should we look forward to in this fight?
Well, this is the finals of the Light Heavyweight Grand Prix. The winner wins not only the Light Heavyweight Championship, which Vadim Nemkov is the champion currently, but also gets $1 million. And this is definitely a conclusion to the tournament. And with Nemkov, he's 14-2. Anderson, I'm trying to remember his record, Corey Anderson's record. 16-5, okay. And Anderson has looked really well in Bellator. He's won 3 in a row, all by stoppages. I mean, it's ground and pound. I mean, he's been ground and pounding guys. Or Bader, he dropped. Well, yeah, it was ground and pound. He dropped Bader and then finished in ground and pound. But, yeah, this is going to be two of the five best light heavyweights in all of MMA fighting each other. I mean, when you think about it, UFC, Bellator, this is two of the five best. I think Nemkov might be the best light heavyweight currently, just me personally, in all of MMA. And if he can go out there and beat Corey Anderson, especially to beat him convincingly, or be a stoppage, or just a domination victory, I think it gives credence to the case that he may be the best light heavyweight in the world. Now, Corey Anderson, he can say the same thing if he goes out there and dominates Nemkov, because let's not forget, Corey Anderson does have victory with Colby Teixeira, which is ironically Teixeira's last loss was to Corey Anderson, too, which is, people forget that. But I think this is going to be, both guys are good wrestlers, good grapplers. Nemkov has a sambo background over in Russia, especially being Fedor's protege. And Corey Anderson has a wrestling background. He's a collegiate wrestler, I believe. I'm not sure if he's All-American or not, but I know he's used in the past in his fights to get success.
So you and I both know what that means. Two great wrestlers coming up against each other.
Striking. I think in this case, it might favor Nemkov. I think Nemkov tends... People are surprised how... I think we mentioned the last fight he had, how quick his hands were, how quick he was standing. Kind of reminded me of Fedor, ironically, his mentor. How Fedor was like, you know, small... Not exactly the biggest heavyweight, but also quick in his hands, quick, great stand-up. He moves so quickly that I catch guys off guard. Nemkov has done that in his MMA career in lightweight. Not the biggest lightweight, but fast, good hands, quick hands too, to catch people off guard. And it's possible that this could be a problem for Corey Anderson. But I think Corey Anderson has, you know, made improvements compared to where he was early in UFC run to the standing, especially training with Mark Henry and those guys in Carl Almeida in Jersey and Tom's River. So I think Corey Anderson still can do decent in stand up wise, but I think it favors Nemkov. I think Nemkov is my favorite to win the fight, but I would not be shocked if Corey Anderson beats him, like, at all.
Okay. That's awesome with the breakdown. I like that. I'm looking forward to this fight. I'm much more so looking forward to this fight. We also have on the card Aaron Pico versus Adley Edwards. I know what to expect from Aaron Pico. What should I expect from Adley Edwards here?
Adley Edwards. Let me pull his shirt off right here because I'm not too familiar with him. I know he's 9-1. I'm not sure. I think this might be his Bellator debut, or I think he might have had by in Bellator before this fight. Let me just double check. Make sure, give me a moment, guys.
Right now, they say he's on a seven fight win streak, so.
Okay, you can hear me, right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. But yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah, on stream. 7.
You froze a little. Open,
so 5 finishes, 4. How about now?
You should be good now.
Okay, testing 1-2, testing 1-2. Oh, I'm good. Yeah, he has four decisions, 5 finishes, so he tends to mix it up his victories. He's 9-1 in a row. He's definitely looked well in his fights. I can see why they're giving Aaron Pico, who's coming 9-3, who I believe is on a 5-5 win streak. Aaron Pico, and I'm not surprised Pico is on this fight in the same card as AJ McKee and Pitbull, because considering Pico is not far from like a title fight, especially if he beats Edwards, where it doesn't matter if he beats him by decision or beats him via stoppage. He's right there, and although Adam Borges is there, I think it might be Adam Borges versus the winner of the main event. But Pico is like right there too. It's possible they could do Pico, and maybe if Pico dominates Edwards and he wins, it'd be hard to do Pico and Pico and McKee, considering the two homegrown Bellator guys who all their fights have been in Bellator. That's kind of like the story you want. That'd be a cool story for Bellator, the homegrown kid guys we've seen grow up now fighting for the championship. That is kind of a cool story. Although it's possible, although I do think I'm a bullshit fight, the winner of the Pitbull McKee fight. But Pico, man, Pico's right there. I mean, Pico's been one of the most highly talented prospects that I remember in MMA history. I mean, I remember when he made his debut, the hype he got. I mean, this guy, Pico, was a pretty good wrestler. The fact that he actually made it to the finals of the qualifying for Olympic wrestling in the United States, that's how good he was. That he almost made the United States Olympic team in 2012, I believe, or 2016 in men's wrestling. That he's trained Freddie Roach, and I think he has gold glove boxing with Freddie Roach. I know he's trained Freddie Roach before, and Freddie Roach spoke highly of him. So, I mean, Pico is, you know, he's showing he's the real deal. I mean, I know he has some early hiccups, but that was more Bellator not doing the best, like, matchmaking for him. Having him go against guys with way much like, more experience than him, and it wasn't the smartest idea. But they've done a better job with, you know, filling back up. He's fought more tougher guys as he's gone his win streak. You can see what him doing well and winning fights. And you can see the talent that everyone talked about before he made his debut. And I'm a fan of Pico because Pico brings in, he's a very entertaining fighter. Comes from a great camp in Jackson Wink MMA. You know, Mike Wigglejohn and Greg Jackson. We know how great those guys are. They're a legendary gym over in New Mexico. And yeah, but Edwards is not going to be easy. I don't think it's going to be an easy fight because Edwards is pretty good. He's won 7 in a row for a reason, but I wouldn't be surprised if Pico beats him either. Maybe he gets a little challenged, but it should be a good fight. I'm glad to see Aaron Pico fight. I like Pico a lot. Big fan.
All right. And then the last fight on the main card, it's the big boys in the heavyweight division. It's Tim Johnson versus Linton Vassell. And I think I've seen Linton Vassell fight before. I know I've seen Tim Johnson fight before, but Linton Vassell, has he fought on UFC before? No.
I don't think so. I know Tim Johnson I've seen fight before. You know, he's coming off that loss to Fedor in Russia back in October. So,
okay, so the last couple of fights he's had, he's on a 3-fight winning streak right now. He beat Tyrell Fortune via split decision, and the other 2 fights he won via ground and pound in the second round. One against Ronnie Marks, the other one against Sergey Karatanov. And I know Sergey Karatanov is fighting in Eagle FC right now. He put on a bit of a performance there. So Maybe this guy is going to put on a dope performance. They have him being favored against Tim Johnson, so who knows. But it's going to be the heavyweights. You and I both know the way this goes with the heavyweights. It could end very early, or it could be a hugging fest.
Yep, I agree. If Vassell can act a great performance against Tim Johnson, I guess maybe he can fight the winner of Congo Ryanator in May in Paris. Or wins that fight, possibly. Sorry about that. But Tim Johnson, I wouldn't be surprised if Tim Johnson wins. I would not be surprised at all. He's got power. He can knock dudes out. Tim Johnson, I believe, has a victory over Martin Tybura, if I'm mistaken. I think Tybura, Volkov, 1-2. He's being one of those guys. I forget who. I'm trying to remember. It was Tybora. He's a victory over Martin Tybora, which Tybora.
Yeah, and he also has a, funny enough, he has a victory over Marcelo Gomes, who is a highly touted prospect in heavyweight division. So we see, yeah, he's got some good victories. Shamil Abdurmakov, he's got a victory over him. And Martin Tybora, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Johnson's pretty good. Like I said, he can. He, I know he's come up with a loss to Fedor, but that's Fedor.
Yeah.
Fedor's the greatest heavyweight of all time. So it's no shame. But I wouldn't be surprised if Tim Johnson beats Vizel. Would not shock me at all. I know Vizel's the favorite, and he should be. So he's done better recently than Tim Johnson. But like I said, don't mean to be a dead horse, but wouldn't shock me if Tim Johnson wins.
I agree with you 100%. But not only that, ladies and gentlemen, we love telling you this. Please, please, on Friday, for free. Because y'all don't like paying for nothing. I don't like paying for nothing. Austin, you like paying for anything?
No, I don't.
Okay. So, for free, you go to the Bellator YouTube account. For free. I gotta reiterate that sometimes, because, you know, yeah. For free.
F-R-E-E.
F-R-E-E. You go to the Bellator YouTube account. 7 o'clock. Or matter of fact, 7 o'clock. Eastern time. You click and you just, it's going to pop up. Matter of fact, it ain't even going to pop up because it's already there waiting for you. So for free, go to the Bellator YouTube account and watch the preliminaries, because the preliminaries is going to be longer than the main card. The main card is 4 fights. The preliminaries has like what, 7 or 8 fights?
Yeah, I think about 8.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 fights. For free. 10 fights for free. And they're gonna end in, a lot of them are gonna end in KO, because this is where the stars are born, in the preliminaries. So please, ladies and gentlemen, do yourself a favor. This Friday, 7 o'clock, Bellator YouTube. I will be there. I will be watching it. I hope you will be.
Yeah, and there's one fight in the prelims I do want to mention real quickly that I'm the most looking forward to see, is Kyle Crutchmer against Michael Lombardo. Kyle Crutchmer, if you hear me talk about him, I'm very high on him. He trains at AKA. He's a All-American wrestler from Oklahoma State, same college as Daniel Cormier, which, ironically enough, Cormier's been one of his mentors, considering, you know, Cormier went to Oklahoma State and obviously was at AKA. He's one of the best fighters to come out there. And he trains at AKA, one of the best gyms, you know, in MMA history. I've already mentioned about Jackson Wink, and AKA's up there as well. And I've seen him train with Habib and all those Dagestanis and Kyle Crutchmore, and we know how good he is. He's A1 for a reason, and he's ranked number 9. So Crutchmore is definitely a guy who could definitely be a force in the welterweight division in Bellator soon. But he's going against a guy in Michael Lombardo, who I'm mistaken is 12-2-1. I think I wrote it down in my notes. 12-2, one no contest. Has won 4 of his last 5 fights, but one of them was a no contest. So definitely a challenge from based on the record for Kyle Crutchmer. Should definitely be a good fight in the prelims. That's definitely a fight I'm looking forward to the most in the prelims. Want to shout that fight out real quick.
We also have a Gracie on the card, Rollin Gracie versus Tyson Miller on the preliminary. So look forward to some very good grappling there for free.
Free.
Last time I'm gonna say it.
Yep.
And we can move on from that. Coming up the next day, it's back, ladies and gentlemen. This Saturday, ESPN Plus. This Saturday, ESPN Plus starts at 5:30. The preliminary starts at 5:30, but we're being blessed with Vicente Luque versus Bilal. Remember the name, Muhammad, in the welterweight division. This decides a lot. This decides a lot. because Vicente Luque is a high riser in the division. Bilal Muhammad is also a high riser in the division. This decides a lot. Both of these guys are so well-rounded. I don't know where this fight is going to go. That's my take on it. I don't even, like, that's the only thing I could say, because if we go into the specifics, you're gonna run yourself ragged with all the possibilities. These two guys are so well-rounded, fundamentally well-rounded in everything, that I don't know. What do you think, Austin? What are your thoughts?
Well, first I want to mention this is a rematch, because these two fought back in UFC 205 in Massacre Garden, the first Massacre Garden show, and Luque knocked out Bilal Muhammad, I believe, in the first round. So this is a rematch where Luque won the previous fight. And it's crazy to think five years later, both guys are top five contenders in the welterweight division. Considering the tie in at Madison Garden show, that was one of the early prelims. Both guys were kind of unknown at the time. Now you see where both of them are now. They're both top five contenders, main event of fight night. Something cool to see. I think that deserves to be mentioned. Luque is number four, Bilal Muhammad number five. Bilal's won six of his last seven. The only thing was a no contest on Networks, which Luque's won 10 of his last 11 fights. The only loss was to Wonderboy back in UFC 244 in November of 2019. So both guys are coming in very confident, on great competitive streaks. You know, have won a lot of their fights, and this fight, this is a big fight, because the winner of this fight is in that title hunt. They're right there with Kobe and Hamzad and, you know, Leon.
Gilbert.
Gilbert's still there. Despite what happened, he's still in that mix. Gilbert, if he wins one fight impressively, he can.
I was going to say this, man. Gilbert, just for even taking the Hamzad Chimaev fight, he deserved to be, you know, like even regardless of you know, win or lose, he, like, if Hamzad's number two, then Gilbert should fall no lower than three or four,
right? Five even, that's it. Yep. That's the lowest. Yeah, but Gilbert's right there. And I think I mentioned earlier what happens in this main event could determine who Gilbert Burns fights next. If Bilal Muhammad were somehow beat Vicente Luque, I think that's the next fight for Gilbert Burns. Gilbert and Bilal Muhammad, considering Gilbert and Vicente Luque are very close, and they train in the same gym in San Fran MMA, and they both agree that they don't want to fight each other. So the thing is, I think if Luque were to win, I don't see them fighting each other, which makes the 170 to a log jam, makes it even tougher in that division, since of what you do next. But if Bilal Muhammad wins, I think it's a good fight to match up with the two of them, Gilbert and Bilal Muhammad. And this is a fight that, for me, I do want to see how Bilal does, because Bilal's good. He's a good fighter, but he hasn't, like, wowed me or impressed me, like, as much as Vicente Luque. Like, I'm high on Luque. Me and you are both high on Luque. We like Luque. Luque is one of my favorite fighters. Guy's entertaining. Brings it. He's won so many ways. Guy is legit. Like, you watch it, you go, damn, I love watching that dude fight. Jeez. And Bilal Muhammad, for me, I'm not high on him as everyone else is. That's not to say he's not a good fighter, but I want to see more from him before I really believe him in, like, a championship fighter, if that makes sense.
Okay. All right.
That's just me.
No. I see what you're talking about in that respect right there. Like, I love Bilal too, and he is a great competitor. I think he's a smart competitor. And if anything, I think the way he would win a fight or even get a title run going is, you know, with the chess match. He'd have to consistently be playing chess in the ring. But part of the chess match is that you're doing a lot of gambling. And I don't know if he's the athletic specimen that's, you know, enough to take those gambles on, because a lot of fighters say this: the more fights you take, you don't get better. You get better in between the fights, not as you fight. You kind of, because you leave a piece of yourself in the ring every time. So I can see your point there. I agree with that 100%. But I'm high on Luque in this fight. Doesn't take away from the fact that if Bilal wins this fight, and he wins it in convincing fashion, or even like regardless, if
he's dominant fashion,
not even dominant fashion. I think if he's able to take it the distance, because Vicente Luque is that type of guy. I think me personally, if you're able to take Vicente Luque to the distance, then you're a highly ranked opponent yourself. But then if he's able to, you know, win the fight, I take nothing away from Bilal Muhammad to where like it's like, you know, he's on the rise for sure. But I take nothing away from your point in saying that Bilal, he may have to win this fight in a dominating fashion or in a spectacular fashion in order for us to really see the competitor that other fans of his see. But moving on, on the co-main event, it's Chael Barallo versus Ghazi Omar. I'm gonna butcher this last name.
Omar Gaziev. I think that's what you said.
Omar Gaziev. It's in the middleweight division. I don't remember any of these guys. I don't think any of them has committed any wins to memory for me recently.
No, I'm thinking. I know.
I'm sorry for cutting you off, but Ghazi is coming off of Contender Series, and I know you and I both don't watch Contender Series.
Right. I know Omar Gaziev is 13-0 with 8 TKO and KO victories and 3 submissions. So he's a 11-13 victory, darts by finish. So he's a finisher. But hang on. Can't read my notes now. Chael
Barallo.
Barallo is 10-1. He's won 9 of his last 10. 7 of his 10 victories are by finish. 4 KO and TKOs and 3 submissions. So he's a finisher too. Both guys tend to finish their fights more often than not. So it could, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a 3-round decision because both guys are so good that they might cancel each other out. It's hard to finish each other. But I wouldn't be surprised if there is a finish in this fight either. I think Omar Gaziev is from Dagestan. I know he's from Russia. I don't know what part of Russia he's from.
In regards to your breakdown of the fight, I agree with you 100%. Not only that, but both of these fighters are coming off of the Contender Series, so this may be something to decide the winner of the Contender Series for the middleweight division. So one of these fighters is going to come out with an opportunity. They're going to get some extra cash in their pocket. They're going to have the opportunity to possibly get a fight of the night bonus. Not only that, but they're going to have an opportunity to get them a ranking in the middleweight division. So we shall see two fighters in the ring hungry with the opportunity to cement their name. It's going to be very interesting.
Yep. I definitely agree. It's very interesting, and I do. Whoever wins is the next prospect in middleweight, a new prospect in middleweight. Considering, you know, Pierre is a prospect who's shooting up right now, especially beats Sean Strickland. We have another one now, especially both guys 10. You know, one's 10-1, the other one's 13-0. Especially if Omar Gaziev stays undefeated. I mean, or even Chiago can definitely win, be 11-1. I mean, handed up him a Russian his first loss. I mean, that would be impressive and shoot him up too, post the rankings. Either way, great fights. This is two prospects who, let's just say, wouldn't surprise me if these two fought again or become contenders in the middleweight division, potentially, based on what they've done so far. I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but would be shocked if 3 years from now these two are rematching in like a more prominent card or more prominent role, where it be a main event of fight night or on pay-per-view card.
I wouldn't be surprised at that at all. But we definitely shall see. Next fight on the card, it's in the welterweight division. Andre Falaho versus Miguel Baeza. This is going to be an interesting fight as well. Very, very interesting fight. Miguel Baeza, I believe he's coming off of a loss to Chaos Williams. Yeah, That was a good fight against Chaos Williams. He's also lost against Santiago Ponzinibbio. So that we know both of these fighters are coming off of losses, and they kind of need to gain their footing back in the UFC with Andre Falaho coming off of a loss to Michelle Piera. So with this fight, I think Falaho, the last fight he had against Piera, he had an opportunity to win that fight. It's just that Piera was way more athletic than him. I think he can gain a footing back in the UFC with a victory in here. But he's fighting Miguel Baeza. You're not fighting Chaos Williams and a guy who, you know, he has abnormal punching power. But we saw Miguel, he had some power to himself. Both of these fighters, they have to stay grounded in their fundamentals. I think that's really what's going to help these fighters. I don't know if any of these fighters have an edge over each other in the terms of power or athleticism, anything like that. But both of them just have to stay grounded in their fundamentals and be ready to stay in the pocket and throw. I think that'll give each of them their best chance of victory. What say you?
I agree. I think if they both stay the fundamentals and execute them, they give them the best chance for a victory. And you're right. Andre Pujol did fight like a couple months ago, the Ngannou and Cyril Gane card. That was like 3 months ago. So it was recent. We saw him, and Pujol just was better and I think more athletic. And I think that's what. I think Fiora was too, like, I think he was, like, too much, like, I think he was so boxy heavy that it kind of hurt him because he didn't mix it up, and it would cost him in that fight, if I'm mistaken. If I remember correctly, that fight, I vaguely remember it, but I do remember seeing him fighting against Fiora on that card. And Miguel Baeza, the guy was 10-0 prior to the Ponzinibbio loss, which early on he was doing well with Ponzinibbio, but then Ponzinibbio turned up late and was able to beat him, and it was a decision. And even the Chaos Williams, he got knocked out badly, and Chaos Williams, we know how good he is, power and stuff. And I think he had that great line. I forget, he liked. I think that was the fight where, what was it he said? That was,
keep sleeping on me, the doctor's gonna have to wake him up.
Ah, I gotcha. Yep, that's a great line from Chaos Williams. But, Miguel Baeza was doing solid, I believe, doing well early in that fight prior to getting knocked out. So, So Miguel Baeza, we know he's talented. He is good. He comes from a great gym, MMA Masters in Miami. I think for you, comes from, Sanford MMA too, if I'm mistaken. Could be wrong about Sanford MMA for Fiolo. And Baeza does have 7 KO, TKOs and 1 submission. So he tends, most of his victories are by this finish. And you say the same thing about Fiolo, who's got 11 KO and TKOs and 1 submission. And so both guys tend to finish, but this could also be a decision as well, where folks kind of cancel each other out because they'd be evenly matched potentially. Kind of like I mentioned with the last fight, the co-main event between Omar Khadazov and You know what I'm talking about, the co-main event.
It's Gazi Omar Gaziev versus
Chao Barallo, and Omar Gaziev. I was mentioning their fight, how they both were finishers, tend to, but they might be evenly matched where it can't bleach her out. It might be a decision because they kind of evenly match, be hard to finish each other, potentially. It might be that type of fight. That's what I was trying to say. Both guys are if it's like a top 25, or like top 30, they're probably like there, I believe. They're like right there. They're there. Maybe they can, you know, one good victory can get them closer to like a top 20, and they're good, solid fighters next. So they're very skilled. I mean, they're both very good fighters. Despite the recent 2-fight losing streak with Baeza and Fiolo losing to Piera and then back in January.
Yeah, but we definitely shall see. We move on to the next fight on the main card in the women's flyweight. Is it flyweight or
It's in bantamweight.
It's in the women's bantamweight division between Mayra Bueno Silva and Yanan Yu. Myra Bueno Silva. I believe I saw I seen her last couple of fights, but Yana and Yu, I haven't seen any of her fights recently.
I haven't either with Yan Wu. I'm not too familiar with her.
Bueno Silva, her last fight, she lost to Manon Fior. And that fight, that wasn't an exciting fight. I remember that one. Neither of them excited me in that fight. Yeah, so there's an opportunity here for either fighter to just, you know, make a name for themselves.
I agree, exactly. And then, the last fight, it was not exciting. You're right about that. Her and Fionn back in October. And Leon Yu, Leon Wu, I'm not too familiar with her. I'm just checking to see if she
fought. They say her last fight was on ABC card in 2021. She lost in a decision against Jocelyn Edwards.
Okay. Oh, what's all
that? It's been a while, and I don't remember that fight either. So both of these fighters have to refresh our memory. We're just keeping it real, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
If the fighter hasn't refreshed our memory, hasn't, you know, kept the fresh memory in our wallet, even with this case of Mayra Bueno Silva, you see it that she left a distasteful, well, that fight, not her per se, but that fight between her and Manon Fior left a distasteful taste in our minds, and so we know to recollect from that. But both fighters have a chance to definitely make a name for themselves and just shake up the cobwebs in everyone's brains.
Yeah, I agree. And again, we can move on to, I believe it might be the first part of the card potentially. That's between Pat Sabatini and TGA Laramie.
In the featherweight division. Pat Sabatini, I believe, is he coming off of a victory?
I believe he is. I think it's.
Yeah, he is against Tucker Lutz. It was a unanimous decision.
Yep.
But that was a year ago. So he does November of last year, so it's been a while for him, but he definitely has a chance to get back into the ring. And we know what Pat Sabatini brings. It's going to be a heavy grappling exchange with him, but can his opponent TJ Laramie stand up to that, defend that, and also can he defend that and keep it a stand-up game? Because from what I'm seeing in his record with TJ Laramie, He has some guillotine, he has some chokeout victories, but most of his victories tend to come from stand-up. So this is going to be a grappling heavy versus a stand-up guy. It's essentially, can TJ Laramie keep Pat Sabatini standing up? But Pat is a ruthless grappler.
Exactly. I was going to bring up the grappling aspect, but you nailed it so well. Pat Sabatini, if I'm mistaken, does have... I believe 10 submissions. Yeah, 10 submissions. That was 16 victories and 2 KO TKOs. I mean, he's one of the guys I think I mentioned with the Dawkinses. He's from Sean Brady. Yeah, I think when Brady fought against Chiesa, they fought on the same card. I was mentioning how the rise of Philadelphia fighters, the Dawkinses and Sean Brady, and now Pat Sabatini is also from the Philadelphia region. I guess he's like the next that wave of Philadelphia fighters, and he's pretty good. Jiu-Jitsu is very good. I mean, grappling is excellent. Definitely a problem in that featherweight division. And if you're TJ Laramie, you gotta be careful. You know, you gotta keep it standing to have a shot to order to beat Sabatini. One thing with TJ is that he hasn't fought since September 2020, the Kobe Covington, Tyron Woodley card. So it's been over a year since you've seen him fight. Is he gonna have ring rust potentially, or is he gonna be like Dominick Cruz and not let it affect him? Like Dominic, that's the question we have to find out Saturday.
I was saying we're definitely gonna find out Saturday.
Yeah, I like Sabatini. Sabatini could be potentially a force in the featherweight division. But then you buy TJ Laramie before we can start. We'll see if he is gonna be that guy to keep our eye on.
I think so. I really think so. But other than that, we do have some interesting fights on the preliminaries. The main fight of the preliminaries, Devin Clark versus William Knight. I hope y'all tune into that one, because that is going to be fireworks. I think that one's going to be fireworks. Do you have any fight on the preliminaries that you see is interesting to you?
I was going to – you mentioned that one, but there's a fight I do want to see. I'm glad. I'm glad we're seeing it again. Chris Barnett, you remember the fight, the head kick knockout, freaking John Volante. I mean, out of nowhere.
Just a spinning wheel kick, and then he does a baby Buddha tumble flip in the air where he flips forward and lands on his butt, and he's just giggling like the baby Buddha or something like that. It's
baby Buddha, you're right. Oh my, I didn't think about that till now. That's a good point.
That's the only thing I could liken it to. It was like a baby Buddha-esque, he just flipped, and that was it. And he's a joyful fighter. I'm interested in watching him. I'm glad.
That was a massacre garden too. He got bonus too, which I'm glad. I think it's a knockout we forgot last year, but it's a great knockout. I don't know where he did it too. Got his size and his build doing that. That's what I thought. It was shocking, but man, I'm glad to see him going back playing again. I mean, if he does something crazy, I mean, I'll lose my mind. If he does something again. I mean, he's 22-7, so he's a good fighter. He's really good.
Another fighter that I want to pay attention to is in the preliminaries, Brandon Jenkins, because he nicknamed himself the Human Highlight Reel because he is like that, the Human Highlight Reel. But the problem is that he, especially in his last fight against Zhu Rong, this is crazy. Zhu Rong wins the fight, right? But Zhu Rong didn't even make weight. So it wasn't, you know, a great fight for Zhu Rong. But Brandon Jenkins, you saw it in his approach. He kept looking for the spectacular KO from the beginning of the fight. And that isn't going to happen. I'm wondering if he can come out composed and then lead up into getting the knockout.
Right, exactly. You're right, because if you try to look for a knockout and just, like, instead of just being composed and lean up to it, it can prevent you from getting an actual knockdown and living up to your nickname, the Human Highlight Reel. Especially considering, you know, you got a name like that, win helps too. Go ahead.
Now I was saying, it winning definitely helps, but you gotta at least execute on that end.
Right, against I'm close, he was, I believe, 11-2. I'm trying to remember, when was the last fight? I'm trying to remember, was it recent close?
It was the Zhu Rong fight. When did that happen?
No, I meant close.
Dracker close?
Yeah.
The last fight was... Wow! His last fight was against Benil Dariush in 2020. March of 2020.
Wow, that is... Dang, that's been probably 2 years since we last seen him fought.
Yes. 2 years, so and especially you got some victories against some names. I know you lost against Benil Dariush, but you have a victory against Bobby Green. You have that's no slouch. You have victory against Mark Diakis. That's not how to pronounce it, but I'm chopping.
Is it Mark DeCasse?
DeCasse is something like that. But yeah. I know he's no slouch. He just had an impressive victory recently. But you have some names, man. And this guy, he has an impressive record too. Like you gotta be more active. Doing yourself no favors. You gotta be more active.
I agree. Yep. And I want exactly if you're gonna potentially move up the rankings. I mean, you got good victories and. Who knows? Let's see. Like I said, Ring Rust can Octagon Rust will hurt him, or if he's gonna pull a Dominic Cruz and that'll affect him. I like to say.
Yeah, most definitely. But with that being said, that's the prelims for us. Like, please, guys, tune in. It starts the event Saturday at 5:30 p.m. Saturday at 5:30 p.m. on ESPN. Tune in for Luque versus Muhammad 2. We getting a rematch going. We got some interesting fights going. But start, you gotta start your MMA weekend off. You started off right.
Yep.
For free. I said I wasn't gonna say it again.
For free on YouTube, Bellator MMA YouTube channel, the prelims for the Bellator event and for the Pitbull McKee rematch. The prelims start at 7 p.m. on Friday night on free on YouTube, so you can watch the prelims there. And then on 9 p.m. Eastern time zone, it goes to Showtime to watch the main card back fights for free. And then the next day on Saturday, the prelims start at 5:30. You mentioned on ESPN Plus for Luque and Bilal Muhammad. And the main card starts at 8 o'clock on ESPN, actually. ESPN on the 8 p.m. Eastern time zone. Eastern time zone, the main card for Luque and Muhammad, too. Again, so this Saturday, both days, you got MMA competition, two big MMA shows going on. Those tours back, and the UFC keeps on rolling after another pay-per-view, a pretty successful pay-per-view previous week.
So please, guys, do yourselves a favor and check that out. But Austin, you got any last words?
Yes, I just noticed the chat, and thank you guys for everyone who's in the chat, from Kelvin to Frankie, to Frank, to Andre, to Be Civilized. As I see, you mentioned for free to emphasize the point for the prelims.
Sorry for
not reading the chat sooner, guys. My apologies, but thank you guys for chatting. And no zombie in that win. Answer your question, Calvin, from earlier. No, he did not.
Yeah, he did not win at all. It was a mollywhopping, and I haven't used that word in a long time. It was a mollywhopping. But yeah, like Austin said, thank you guys so much for joining us in the chat. Andre, Kelvin T. Jones, the mayor of the BX Sports Jedi Network, thank you so much. Be Civilized. My guy, Frankie, Khalees. And we love giving anyone who joins us on the YouTube show a shout out. We will give you a shout out at the end of the show. But from myself and Austin and anyone checking us out on any and all audio podcast platforms, whether that be Anchor, whether that be Spotify, whether that be iTunes, whether that be Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcast, thank you so much. Spreaker, thank you so much for joining us. We love breaking down the UFC. We got more MMA to break down. We got the Bellator coming back. We got so much events coming back. We can't wait to break down the events coming up this Friday and this Saturday. And we will do so with you guys in the chat. So once again, thank you guys so much for joining us. And peace.
Peace, guys. Good night. And look forward to seeing you guys again next week.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are...